Welcome to episode 460 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And holy crap, 460, really? This is the show where we talk about consumer entertainment technology with a slight slant on Microsoft, but a little bit less so these days. Josh, how are you?
I am doing quite well. Yeah, 460, that's it's only 40 episodes away from 500.
That's a nice round number. I like that.
It is. It is a nice number. I like it a lot. You know what else I like a lot?
Feedback?
Yes, listen
well,
to feedback.
Well, then, it's a good thing. Oh, wait. Yeah, we don't have any.
Right. So I guess we can breeze past that, except to remind people that if they do want to send us some, our email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So I guess that leaves us plenty of time to dive into our topics for tonight. A fair amount of news. None of it that I would really call a featured story. A lot of stuff going on, but nothing like blow your socks off sort of exciting. So we're going to do something I really, really, really hate to do.
We're going to start with an Apple story?
Start with an Apple story.
Yeah. So Wednesday, the day after we last recorded, was the Apple event where they announced all of the OSs. All of the OSs are out now. And there were OSs for all of my devices. But, you know, the only one I really cared about was the one for my Apple TV.
Yeah.
Because this adds Dolby Atmos.
Woohoo, finally. When was this announced? Like June?
Yeah, I think it was announced WWDC, actually. So probably June. And frankly, I think they even talked publicly about how they planned on adding this to the Apple TV 4K box from the beginning, but it was going to be a later add-on. So technically, we've had this for nearly a year, just kind of looming.
Whoa.
And now it's here, and it's awesome. So it works on the usual suspects. It works on Vudu. It works on Netflix. It works, of course, on Apple Movies and in the TV app for movies that you might watch that you purchased through Apple. It is worth noting that, like 4K, if you already purchased a movie that has Dolby Atmos available but wasn't previously available through Apple Movies or iTunes, you get it. You get it as an upgrade automatically, which is kind of sweet.
That's the way to do it.
Yep. Absolutely it is. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is that unlike 4K, where there's a specific filter to be able to see all your 4K movies, there isn't a way of going to see all of your Atmos movies. So I'm assuming they're thinking this isn't going to be a decision maker for what you're going to watch tonight. But it is wonderful. It's everything that Dolby Atmos is supposed to be. It's very well implemented. The only frustrating part is that it's not everywhere. It's not on the Amazon app yet. It's not on YouTube, even though YouTube does have Dolby Atmos content. The app that is available on the Apple TV does not support it. And most frustratingly, for me anyway, it's not on Plex, and I really wanted that. I was just kind of hoping it would work.
Right, because you've got all these Blu-ray rips and stuff that have Atmos on them.
Right, and what's interesting is that prior to this update, when I selected the True HD 7.1 track on my movies, which is the track that would be used for Atmos, it wouldn't play at all. I would get no audio output at all. Now it plays, but it plays as 7.1. So hopefully that's something that the team at Plex will work on updating. Obviously, it wasn't a priority for them if it wasn't supported before, but I hope that's something that they come out with pretty quickly. And usually they're pretty quick to iterate. So I'm really happy with this. I think if you already own movies and you are in the iTunes ecosystem, you should give this a look. But, you know, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, this makes it way less necessary for me to ever go to my Xbox to watch content.
Oh, man.
The last reason that I was going there was that I either wanted to watch it on disc or that I wanted to watch it with Atmos, and I couldn't get that yet over on the Apple TV. So nice.
So now it's just for disc-based stuff.
Yeah.
Which is probably just rentals at this point.
Well, I usually try to watch the first time I watch a movie, I try to watch it on disc. So I get the whole high fidelity, high bitrate experience. And then, you know, until Plex also supports this, I won't be able to get that over on the Apple TV. So, you know, we'll have to see. But
right.
Good stuff. Good stuff. It is worth noting that this only works on the Apple TV 4K. That's the device that makes it available. I, you know, as I'm saying that, I need to double check. It may also be available on the Apple TV 4 because I have, you know, that disc that I talked about last time, the Hans Zimmer concert. Yeah. I have that on Blu-ray, and that is something that technically is available in Atmos, even though it's Blu-ray. So I need to follow up on this, and I'll let you know. The other thing that I wanted to find out, or that I wanted to let people know, rather, from my own experience, is that in the past, you had the ability to select whether you wanted your Apple TV to automatically encode the best available audio for you, depending on what your devices and sources were capable of providing. And I think it was either called variable audio or dynamic audio or something like that. You need to go into your audio settings and turn that off to be able to get Dolby Atmos. So that means if you have that enabled by default, Atmos will not work, will not be available for you anywhere. So to make sure that this is working for you, go into your audio settings on your Apple TV and check that you have audio set to play Dolby Atmos. If it's disabled, it's probably because you have that variable audio encoding on, and you can turn that off and boom, you get Atmos.
Cool.
All right. Well, while we're talking about great new things on streaming devices, everybody knows I'm kind of a space freak. And one of the things that I'm really enjoying these days is all of the coverage of different events like launches and stuff like that that is on NASA TV. Well, NASA TV isn't available on all cable providers and certainly isn't available on all boxes. It's not even really available on the Xbox without some kind of third-party hacky app. But there is now an official NASA TV channel available on Roku, and it is 4K HDR. So
holy cow.
You can
really?
Get, yeah, absolutely. You know, this reminds me of the days when who had HD before anybody else did? Public television.
Right.
So who has awesome 4K HDR as a regular streaming content mechanism? NASA, the government. How cool is that? They also, and you know, they're thinking for the future. They also feature a channel on NASA TV that lets you watch live streaming and time-lapse video from the ISS. But oh, by the way, those are actually captured in 8K.
Oh, man.
They can only stream them in 4K right now.
Right. Jeez. So all that stuff that we said the last 2 weeks about not getting an 8K TV? No, it's still all true.
Yeah, it kind of is. It kind of is. But I love to see that we're getting some real content out there. And, everybody knows I'm big into the space program and what NASA's doing, and NASA TV is actually an amazing resource if you're into finding out what's going on there. So this is cool stuff. I highly recommend you check it out.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to have to see if it's on any of the devices I have. You said it's not on the Xbox. I don't know if it's on NVIDIA Shield TV. I have a Roku, but it's not 4K. I don't even have it hooked up. And I don't know if it's built, if they have an app for it on my Vizio TV. Those are my only options. So hopefully it's on one of them.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Worst case, open it on a browser in your computer.
That's, yeah. Well, but I don't have my computer hooked up to my 4K TV.
No, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would need like, I don't know, something like, I don't know, a home theater computer or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, what would you call that? Anyway. Something fancy like an HTPC. No, I think we're kind of past that at this point, especially when you're talking 4K. So let's hit on a couple other quick video stories before we get into a fun little discussion topic. A couple of quick items from Plex. The grid guide that we had waited so long for, just to be announced, let alone delivered. Richard, I think you said it came to Apple TV this summer sometime.
Yeah, I think it was early July.
Okay. It's now on Android TV. So if you've got an NVIDIA Shield TV or, you know, one of those other boxes and you've got a Plex app, well, now you've got a grid guide. It's
nice.
A little weird getting to it. I imagine it's the same interface on your Apple TV. Although, actually, it's probably not. A lot of things are different on Apple TV, so maybe not. But it's there, and it works. And I'm happy with it as a basic implementation, but thinking back to like my Media Center days and stuff where you could use like the skip ahead buttons to go forward 12 hours and stuff like that, I couldn't find any type of features like that on Android TV. So that's a little sad when you're looking at like maybe it's Monday night and you're wondering if you've got Meet the Press scheduled on Sunday, or maybe a football game that's coming up on Sunday, and you have to just scroll and scroll and scroll through many, many days of listings to get there. That's kind of no fun, but at least you've got it. So I can't complain too much.
Cool. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. And then the other Plex news is that they've brought podcasts to some of their TV platforms. It's on Android. It is not on Xbox. What about the devices you use, Richard?
Well, it's not on my Apple TV because I turned it off, but it is on Apple TV.
Yay for customization, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's good news if you want to watch your podcast on your TV. And there are some good video podcasts out there, and maybe you're just using your TV for playing back your audio podcast through your nice audio system hooked up to your TV. And the nice thing there is that your progress in those episodes is synced across devices. So if you've been out all day listening to podcasts through Plex on your phone, and then you get home, you can pick up right where you left off on your TV. So that's a really good thing to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think like you, this is maybe kind of limited in its real world use. So
yeah, it's just not a use case for me. I can't imagine sitting in front of the television or even having the television on to listen to audio shows. I mean, I always have my phone on me, or I always have a speaker nearby. So why would I do that?
Yeah, and I think part of the problem with that is that podcasts are inherently a personal consumption thing. Like even the podcast right. that Jen and I both listen to, we're not listening to them at the exact same time.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, so, that's so odd too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm usually ahead of her because I'm kind of the podcast junkie here. No surprise to anybody. All right, one more quick news story. This is surprisingly not Plex. Hulu and Sling, so this is the Hulu live TV service that's $35 a month, I think, and Sling TV, that both their blue and orange services, sort of, I guess you could look at this as all three services are getting 5 channels from Discovery. So that's awesome. You're going to get Discovery Channel, TLC. Those are really the big ones, right? Then Investigation Discovery, which I think my sister might be the only person on the planet who watches that channel, Motor Trend, and Animal Planet. All of those coming in December to Hulu. Weren't really any dates announced for when they would come to Sling, but I would imagine it's maybe around the same time frame. And supposedly, at least on the Sling side, it won't cause an immediate price increase in the subscription. So a few pretty big name channels here with some pretty big content offerings. And at least on the Hulu side, it also includes a whole bunch. We're talking thousands of episodes of video on demand content from these networks also. So cool news on the cord cutter front if you're getting your premium TV through internet streaming.
Yeah, I mean, two things I want to point out here. One is that the HD Home Run premium service that we talked about previously already gets Discovery, TLC, and Animal Planet. So they already kind of have a leg up on this. Oh, and by the way, HGTV, which I believe nobody else has. And then the other thing that I found interesting here is that, remember, if you're getting this through Hulu, that on most devices, Hulu is still only in stereo.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah, it is not the case on Xbox. Xbox gets 5.1, but nothing else does yet.
Wow. Yeah, good call out on that. I had totally forgotten about that. All right, well, you've got a really great discussion topic for us here, so I will let you kick off this final video segment.
Yeah, so I don't know what happened to your year, Josh, but mine somehow went away, and it's already fall TV season.
I don't know how that's possible either.
I'm so old. Unbelievable. Seriously, it is already the start of the new TV season, and that means two things. One, shows that you already know and love and recorded, that maybe you're not caught up on. I mean, hypothetically, maybe you have episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hawaii Five-0 that you haven't finished watching from last season. Just hypothetically, right?
Or maybe hypothetically, you haven't gotten all the way through The Gifted.
Right.
Hypothetically.
Right. Stuff like that.
Because real fans would have gotten through all of that stuff by now.
Many of those things are starting up again. So, you know, it's kind of, it's that put up or shut up time. You really kind of need to start getting ready for new content when you haven't even gotten through the old yet. The other thing is that, of course, we have new shows. And I started thinking about this a little bit differently than I have in the years past. Old shows that I've already set up to watch and record, they're already on my DVR. I don't really have to do anything to make that happen. I just need to make sure that there's some space for them, which, believe it or not, is going to take a little bit of time on my part. But new shows, I have to make a decision. Am I going to record new shows, or am I just going to, like, you know, set bookmarks or favorites or add them to my list or whatever the heck you do in whatever service they're going to show up in? And I think it's going to depend. I think it's going to depend on whether it's the kind of show that I feel like I'm going to be able to keep up with and I have enough interest in keeping up with, and where it is. The bad news for me, as far as streaming is concerned, is that everything that I'm interested in is on CBS.
Ooh.
And you know, I don't mean to make too much light of this, but everybody knows I wasn't a huge fan. Uncle Les isn't there anymore, but he was the big advocate for the, no, you're going to pay for our super content that's better than anybody else's, even though it's all the same. Right. And so CBS All Access is their own content that you have to pay for separately from what everybody else is doing in Hulu. And I don't pay that. I don't pay to have that one network. So the only way that I'm going to be able to actually watch these after the fact, if I want to, is I have to record them. So I was curious, as I was looking through the things that I'm interested in, what are you doing? How are you handling this, Josh?
Well, this is a little bit easier for me because I don't watch nearly as many shows as you do.
True.
As I was trying to think of returning shows that I'm really interested in watching, it really only comes down to three, and only two of them are even slated to be this fall. which is kind of nuts. I've got The Good Place and The Gifted. Right, right. both starting next week, and those are over the air, and I'll probably just record them with Plex. But then the other one for me is Mr. Robot, and that's not until sometime next year for that one, because I don't have cable TV or one of these premium TV subscription services. I just buy those seasons directly from Amazon.
Yeah.
And that's the super easy way for me to do that. I'm actually really looking forward to that model now that I've got a better tablet and stuff like that. So yeah, it's probably going to be Plex DVR for me. You know, I always like to go back and forth between like setting some shows to record on Plex DVR and some of them to record on HD Home Run DVR, just so I can monitor to see how well all of those different things are working. But Plex makes things a little bit more available. And now granted, I've got my whole setup where it's all running on an NVIDIA Shield TV. So all of the things that are recorded with the HD Home Run DVR automatically are showing up in my Plex library. So it's not like it's that hard to get to it. But yeah, so that's probably how I'm going to do it. I would like to go back just a little bit and discuss. You mentioned that some shows you would rather not record. You'd rather deal with them through streaming services. What is it that makes that decision for you?
So if there's something that I know that I'm going to keep up with on a regular basis, like when it comes out,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the only examples that I have are on CBS. Right? So I can't really do that. So my answer is no, I'm not just going to earmark things in streaming services, because that doesn't work for me. But the shows that I keep up with on a regular basis are my guilty pleasure shows.
Mm-hmm.
Are shows like Big Brother, The Amazing Race, stuff where I want to be as up to date as possible, and you know, don't want to be watching after the fact after everybody else is talking about it. There are a couple other shows like This Is Us that I'm guaranteed to watch the week it comes out. So theoretically, I shouldn't have to record those, but I already have the recording set. So am I going to cancel it? Nah, probably not, because it's a good right. backup, right?
Right. So what you're saying is that under ideal circumstances, if it's something you're going to watch right away, you'd rather watch it on a streaming service like Hulu?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Particularly with Hulu, where I don't have to deal with skipping through commercials. It just ignores them for me.
Okay. So that's the main reason.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So there's a lot of stuff that I record, but when I go to watch it, if I'm within the window that there are still episodes available online, I'll watch it online if it's on Hulu so that I don't have to figure out, okay, is it 4 commercials, 5 commercials, 5.5 commercials, need to go back 15 seconds, you know?
Right. That makes a ton of sense. That really makes me want to consider Hulu. You know, and actually I ended up using Hulu, although a friend for some of my episodes of The Good Place last year, because I was using that to also test Plex's automatic commercial removal stuff, and it chopped off the ends of some episodes.
Right.
So over my lunch break at work, I would just watch the show again with a friend who had a Hulu subscription.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And then I wouldn't miss anything.
Also, by the way, that Plex commercial skipping could be wonderful now, but we wouldn't know any better because I don't trust it anymore.
I'm going to give it another try.
Oh,
and
good
I'm going to do
you.
It with The Good Place because I have that easy backup.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
And when it's only a 30-minute show, it's even easier to experiment with like that, you know?
Right.
So
now, one other thing I want to bring up as an alternative that people might not have thought of is Play on Cloud. And everybody forgets that Play on Cloud is able to record content from all of the major networks, including CBS. So that might be a way, if you're interested in recording content from the different networks, to be able to archive it. It's available in the cloud. If you want to download it and watch it 30 days later, you can do that. just have it auto-download to your device or download it from the service down onto your computer and then play it wherever you want to. It's a little bit clumsy, but it gets the job done. Now, I will say it's not as good as watching it streaming because there are, you know, they're sync glitches and stuff like that, but it's a decent alternative if you don't have any other way of, say, capturing stuff from CBS as an example that you want to watch at a later point.
Yeah, my only complaint with PlayOn is that it still records at 720p.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Yeah. It's 2018. I want to record this stuff at a higher resolution.
Right, right.
You know, we've got Kevin in the chat, and he's still using Windows Media Center.
Oh, man.
And
good for him.
It's working out great for him. Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely days I still really miss that thing. It certainly had a lot of great things going for it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that, why don't we draw our video segment to a close and move on to our gaming segment? In this area, we've only got one major news story here. And this feels like it's going to become a regular segment where I complain about the state of PC gaming. We are just days away from NVIDIA's brand new generation of video cards being released. The big dog is the new RTX 2080 Ti. They're also releasing just a regular 2080 and a 2070. And reviews have not hit yet. I'm sure they're all embargoed for a specific date. But a particular game, Final Fantasy 15 on PC, they have a downloadable app that you can run on your PC and do benchmarks with your hardware. And then it uploads all that data to a website for everybody to see. And some people who have these new cards have done that. So that data is up on the web already, even though review stuff shouldn't be up yet. And some people found this. I found an article over at Forbes that took a look at these numbers and did a little bit of math. This doesn't sound great. Now, let me preface all of this by saying this is only one game. And, you know, game to game, you can see very different performance numbers and frame rates and all of that stuff on a given card. Some games run great, some don't. There's a lot of variables here. But given what we have here, it doesn't look great for this new generation of NVIDIA cards, especially when you factor in the price. So this article mostly focused in on 1440p resolution and 4K. And the difference between the RTX 2080 Ti versus the current generation 1080 Ti, you're only getting about 30% better performance. Now, 30%, that's not nothing. That's absolutely noticeable numbers. But when you look at the price, you're paying 70% more for the card. When the 1080 Ti card was released, it was $700, which is bonkers already. And then they announced this RTX 2080 Ti. It's $1,200 for a video card.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
That's 30% better for this one game? Come on. Okay, so that's just one game. Maybe other games, it'll be drastically better. The other thing to consider here is that one of the really awesome things in this new generation of cards is this real-time ray tracing capabilities. I'm not going to get into what all of that means. In general, it's going to mean games are going to look absolutely stunning once they can start to take advantage of this technology, like way better than they even look now, which is almost hard to imagine. like we could be looking at almost photorealistic graphics in this generation running at a reasonable frame rate at high resolution. It should be insane. But none of the games are doing that yet. Not really. So right now, if you drop $1,200 on an RTX 2080 Ti, you're going to be spending a ton of money for only a little bit more performance. In a year, when a bunch of these games take advantage of this stuff, then maybe we're going to be in a different world altogether. And the performance will be absolutely, you know, way, way better for graphics that are unbelievably better. But that is not the case right now. And when the rest of these reviews actually come out, if the numbers aren't a whole lot better than this, I wonder what this is going to do for sales of these things, because all of that really cool technology is great, but it's only great if people actually buy the cards, because if they don't, the game developers won't spend all of that time to develop that technology into their games.
Right.
So yeah, really, really glad I have an Xbox One X.
You don't have to worry about all of that.
I don't have to worry about any of this.
Well, but even people with good consoles still occasionally really want that theoretically better PC gaming experience, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But the prices are just out of control.
Yep.
Because I would love to have a great graphics card in my PC. I have considered myself a PC gamer for a long time, but not almost never anymore do I play games on my PC because I'm not willing to spend the money on a new graphics card. I'll just play the games on my Xbox or my PlayStation. Almost everything is on those two devices. I don't really feel like I'm missing out on the PC side.
You know, last week I was, if it was last week or the week before, I was jokingly, maybe not jokingly, blaming these prices on mining. And I think that there's a certain amount of truth to that. But if you think about this more, the graphics card industry as a whole has really changed pretty dramatically over the last couple of years. I mean, think about the average computer user, even somebody who might build their own computer that just wants a regular old computer and isn't trying to build a gaming rig. Almost everything has onboard video now.
Right.
Which is pretty darn good for most purposes.
Oh, yeah. It's, in fact, it's more than acceptable for almost all normal purposes.
So I have to wonder how much of this is also trying to figure out how to like make up for some of that otherwise lost revenue that Intel's just building into their chipset.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And you're not wrong about the cryptocurrency mining. That is what sent the price of so many of these cards skyrocketing over the last couple of years.
Sure.
That has started to come down as the cryptocurrency stuff has started to chill out and the values of those coins has dropped so much, but not that much. Not that much.
Yeah.
You know, we're still paying for a 1080, you're still paying more now than what those cards cost brand new when they first came out in 2016. That's crazy.
Right.
It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Enough of my ranting about PC games. Let's get on to some deals and then on to some free games on the consoles. So deals with gold this week on the Xbox side. A lot of good ones in here. I'm trying to just stick to one deal per console here. So I'm going to go with one of my favorite games of this generation, Ori and the Blind Forest. The definitive edition is half off, so it's $10. If you still haven't played that game, just go buy it. It's so gorgeous. It's so beautiful. It's so wonderful. Seriously, I would say best platformer of this generation, without a doubt. Then on the PlayStation side, a far lesser known game, I think. It's called Adrift. It is available for $6. It is normally $20.
This is not the movie that just came out on Blu-ray today.
No, I didn't know that was a movie. but if you want to know what this game is, it's easiest to think about another movie, and that's a very well-known movie called Gravity that had Sandra Bullock in it. That movie was about Sandra Bullock like getting ejected out of a space station and floating around in space and how terrifying that is.
Yep.
Yeah, now imagine that's a game that you play in first person. Yeah, that's what Adrift is. It sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can get that for $6 over on the PlayStation side. Quick hit on Xbox Games with Gold, because we're in the second half of the month. Prison Architect and Live Lock free on the Xbox One, and Sega Vintage Collection Monster World is the 360 game, which is backward compatible with the Xbox One. I noticed something after we recorded last week. I never updated the PlayStation Plus games for September, and there's some good ones in here. There's some really good ones in here. Destiny 2, one of the biggest games of, I don't know, the last year or so, available for free. That's a PlayStation 4 title. They also just got a huge expansion, so you still have to buy that expansion if you want to play that stuff, but the base game is free. God of War 3 Remastered is free. That's also a PS4 game. And then your other ones are Another World, which is PS3 and PS4. Foul Play, which is a side-scrolling co-op brawler. So think like old school, like Streets of Rage, Battletoads, that sort of style of game. That's on PS4 and Vita. Cube Director's Cut, this is a first-person puzzle game. It's on basically every platform. It's available on PS3 and PS4. Sparkle 2, this is a puzzle game. There's so many games on PlayStation. This is available on Vita and PS3 and PS4. And Here They Lie is your free PlayStation VR game. And that, like, seems like most VR games, is a horror game. So all of those are free on those various PlayStation consoles if you have PlayStation Plus.
Cool. Is that it for gaming?
That's it for gaming.
All right. And that's it for news in this episode. So we'll talk about what's going on in our respective entertainment centers. And I will kick us off as usual. I think most of you know that in addition to my dusty media center that just really does nothing but eat watts, and my Plex server, which I do use as a DVR, I also have some TiVo devices in my home. The more senior of my TiVo devices, the TiVo Elite Pro, which was an awesome 6-tuner or 4-tuner, I don't remember what, device with like an obscene amount of onboard storage, is kind of my backup. It's in my office, and I put stuff off to that when I need more room on the TiVo Romeo that's in the family room, which is in and of itself a generation behind. The TiVo in my office is starting to sound like an old Xbox 360. I can hear mechanisms inside it 24 hours a day.
That's not good, man.
That's not a good thing. Because really the only mechanism inside of that thing is a hard drive.
Right. Maybe a fan. It could be a fan.
It could be a fan. It's
but
possible.
But if the fan goes, everything is toast.
Right. Right. So I have been actively pulling content that I had previously been basically archiving onto that TiVo, off of that TiVo, using the CTiVo program on my Mac, which encodes it to MP4, and then I can just make that available on any server to whatever I want to use to watch it. So I just put it out on my Plex server. So that has been a project over the last week or two, because I'm desperately trying to get stuff off of it before it dies.
Right.
The other thing that I've been doing is, we've talked about Plex being able to present your music library, and I've never really done that because I already have my music library in iTunes. I use iOS devices to play stuff back, or Sonos, and Sonos connects to iTunes. Well, Sonos also connects to Plex, but the benefit of using Sonos with Plex, particularly if you have shared Plex libraries with your friends, is that then you can also peruse your friends' music libraries through Sonos or any other Plex client for that matter.
Right.
And so my old friend from college, Chris, who's you've probably heard us talk about in the past because he comes with us to CES and he's been on Home On a couple times, he put his library up there and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I haven't heard that in a while. I'll play that. And, I think I'll listen to that. And so I decided, all right, you know what? I should put my own library up there. So I have done the same. And I'm kind of impressed by what a good job it does of indexing everything and getting updated metadata. I will say it mangled some of my previously intentionally, like specifically downloaded cover art. And by mangled, I don't mean that it destroyed the file that I had, but it did insert its own cover art in Sonos, which is nowhere near as good as what I had previously downloaded.
Oh, okay.
But it's nice to have that all in one place. The other thing that's nice about it is that there's a lot of music in there that I can play. Like, what I could do is I could say, not include any of my Christmas music in either iTunes or Plex. And then I know that if I just want to randomly play something and not in, you know, April, end up with a random Christmas song, that I could do that in one of the libraries or the other. So that's something else that I plan on doing in the next week or so. But
I don't know about you, but Winter Wonderland is part of my 4th of July rotation.
Absolutely. Christmas in July. Yes. Right. Oh, man. So anyway, now, as far as what I've been watching, the usual stuff, Big Brother, Better Call Saul, Game of Thrones, started catching up on Hawaii Five-0. I kind of alluded to that a little bit earlier. This weekend, we watched the live action Beauty and the Beast from Disney. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that?
The rest of my family has, but I have not. I think they saw it in the theaters.
They did a pretty good job with it. It's a weird one to make live action because it's like mystical and magical.
Right, especially the ending.
A lot of it, right? So, like, how do you make a live-action film out of that and make it realistic? Well, it wasn't realistic. It was kind of like the over-the-top kind of live stage thing. But
it was
good. They did a good job. Just lots of computer effects. Mm. And so what I'm really looking forward to, and I don't know if you, A, care about this movie, or B, know that this is happening, but you probably should, considering that you have two daughters. Mulan is going to be a live action film.
Oh, yes. No, I do know about that.
And I am so excited about that because they could do that for real without all of like this like magical effects crap.
Well, but there is, I'm blanking on his name, but the little dragon.
Yeah. That's fine. They'll come up with something.
It's not like every character in it the way that it would be with Beauty and the Beast, where you've got a cup and a candlestick and a clock. Right,
exactly.
And all this other craziness,
yeah, right? Exactly. So I think they have a really cool opportunity there, and I'm really looking forward to it. But it doesn't come out till like Christmas next year or something like that. So it's a long way away. Anyway, so those are the things that I have been watching. I also have been tweeting about wanting to watch The First, the series on Hulu about going to the moon with Sean Penn. I binged it. I watched the whole thing in like 3 days.
Wow.
Don't.
Oh my gosh.
Let me save
Seriously?
Everybody time. Just don't.
Man, you talked about this last week and I was ready to sign up for Hulu to watch this.
This story could have been told in 2 hours. It probably should have been told in 2 hours. It doesn't go as far as it needs to in the story to meet the hype that they sell in the trailers. So I was incredibly disappointed. Sean Penn does an amazing job. I always forget what an incredible actor he is, but the if I had to describe it in one word, it's tedious. The whole thing is just way too slow. In ways, it's very predictable. And I was just, I haven't been as disappointed after finishing a first season of something. And if this gets a second season, it's a miracle. Since the first season of The Leftovers, which just left me frustrated, disappointed, and emotionally exhausted. And I'm like, why would I go through that again? And that's kind of how I felt coming out of the binge of The First. So, you know, I'm a space buff. I love this stuff. I really wanted to see a story that focused on how it impacted the lives of all the people that made it happen and explore that more than you could in, say, something like Apollo 13, which also right. did a fairly good job of trying to tell that same story. But I think they missed the mark on this one.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, very disappointing. I mentioned that there are some things that I've set up to record for next season. I already mentioned that I'm excited about Magnum and Murphy Brown. I'm only going to watch shows that are new next season, starting with the letter M. And they all have to be on CBS. So I'm watching Magnum, Murphy Brown, and Manifest. And that's it. Those are the only new shows that I'm really interested in this coming season.
What's Manifest?
Manifest is... think of it as Lost and some like weird alien thing, like maybe Invasion. Hmm. So it basically you have a plane full of people that goes missing and shows up 5 years later, but the people in the plane don't realize that they were gone for 5 years.
It sounds interesting.
Yeah. It has potential.
Yeah.
So that is pretty much it. If you want to follow what I'm watching, you can follow me on TV Line or on the TV Time app at R. Gunther. Just let me know you're going to do that because my account is not open by default. Josh, what are you watching? What are you playing? What are you doing? What's going on in your entertainment center?
Unfortunately, not a whole lot of watching. Well, other than college football and NFL football, but that's not exciting.
No, but that totally counts.
It does. It does.
I mean, sports look awesome on those beautiful 4K televisions.
It's true. It is true. So a little bit of that. Well, plus I was out of town all weekend, so that makes it harder to catch up on TV shows. So I did want to update everybody on the SoundCloud story that we talked about last week, where SoundCloud introduced personalized playlist. And I was really excited about this until I actually used it. And I gave it 2 weeks of a chance here because there was last week's playlist and this week's playlist, and it's not great. And the biggest problem is, and maybe this is just me, I would love for someone to let me know if it's working out better for them, if they're big SoundCloud users. Maybe I'm not a big enough SoundCloud user because so many of the songs that it was recommending to me were super old. And I'm not going to SoundCloud to listen to old music. I want to listen to new music.
Right.
You know, I don't want to hear songs from 2014 in a new personalized playlist. Sorry. No, not happening. So I might be done with that thing. I'll just continue to follow the artists that I care about and go from there. On the gaming side, I have a problem, Richard. I have a problem with actually finishing games. I can't really explain this one so much. I was lazy, didn't feel like switching over to my PlayStation the other night, so I haven't played much Horizon Zero Dawn in the last week or so. And I've got Nier Automata, whatever it's called, to keep playing through, but for whatever reason, I wanted to try something new. And I've got Xbox Game Pass right now because of the end of August. They did the promo where you could get 2 months of Xbox Game Pass for $2. And with Forza Horizon 4 coming out at the very beginning of October, and it will be available on Game Pass the day that it comes out.
Like hells, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. $2 for Forza Horizon 4 for a month? Sounds perfect. Well, there's obviously over 100 other games in Game Pass to check out. And one of them is an RPG that I've been curious about for a long time, and it's called Wasteland 2. It's the second game in the series. It's billed as like a spiritual successor to the original Fallout games. And when I say original Fallout games, the first Fallout came out in 1997. That's how old those games were.
No way. And seriously?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember loving the first Fallout. So I thought maybe I should give Wasteland a try because it looks like the gameplay looks really similar. It's cool. I played it for like 2.5 hours last night and it's cool. Am I going to finish it? chances are slim, especially considering it's a really, really long game. But it's cool. It's a long role-playing game. I think it's listed as like 30 to 40-ish hours just if you go through the main content. But it's not, you know, it's not your typical fantasy role-playing game. I don't really get into fantasy stuff. This is post-apocalypse. Very similar storyline to the original Fallout in that it's after a nuclear war has basically destroyed the world, and you play as a squad of like military-esque rangers in the Arizona desert. And it's kind of cool. So maybe check that out if you've got Xbox Game Pass. This is not some like little cheap game that they just tossed into Game Pass. This is a $40 like real deal game. So if that sounds interesting to you, check it out, because it's so far 2.5 hours into, you know, a game you could spend 100 hours on. Pretty good. Pretty good indeed.
2.5 hours into another game I won't finish.
Probably not, especially considering Forza Horizon 4. Oh, I did play something else I should mention. The Call of Duty Black Ops 4 beta was this weekend, specifically for their Battle Royale mode called Blackout. So this is like Call of Duty's version of PUBG. And I was really excited to check this out, but I was gone most of the weekend, so I only got to play on Sunday night. And it was really cool. Like, I've been pretty excited about Call of Duty Black Ops 4 because I really like the Black Ops games. I like the games that Treyarch makes. We've got a listener that works for Treyarch, and he's a super cool guy. So very excited to play this. And I really, really enjoyed the Blackout beta. If you've played PUBG and if you've played Fortnite, it's kind of in between those, which is really what we expected. It plays a lot faster than PUBG because it's Call of Duty, but it's got, you know, modern guns and stuff like that instead of all the cartoony stuff of Fortnite. There's no building like you have in Fortnite. It's just drop in, last man standing wins, and it's cool. It's a lot faster than PUBG. You're not going to be running around for 10 minutes looking for a gun. You're going to find it quick. You're going to get into gunfights quick. I had a couple of matches that I finished in the top 10, and they still lasted less than 20 minutes. Like, if you're top 10 in PUBG, you're looking at a half hour match. So it's kind of nice to get in, get out kind of quickly. It has me very, very excited for the next Call of Duty, which is, I want to say, the second week of October. So I've got a lot of games coming up in October that are, oh, and NHL 19 just came out. So it's not looking good for Wasteland 2. I really shouldn't have started this game. But it's cool. I wanted to know. So, all right, that's it for me and what's going on in my entertainment center.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, just a quick announcement that I was on the latest episode of Home Tech FM. And if you don't remember, Home Tech FM is a podcast similar to Home On, except their focus is really on the installer segment and how DIY products are kind of creeping into that space. So they talk about that a lot. And I've been on their show a number of times. This time I was on with another guest, and all of us had been at Cedia. So we had something of a roundtable discussion of our respective takeaways from Cedia, covering really everything. You know, whereas here I spoke primarily about entertainment, on the Home On episode that I recorded there, we were focused on smart home control, whereas in the installer space, you're looking at all of that. So we had a really good discussion with our different perspectives on things, two installers, one support person, and then me basically representing the perspective of, I guess, the consumer.
Yeah, the DIY guy.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. Very cool. I will probably be checking that out tomorrow morning, I think. All right. Well, if you want to get a hold of us, you can find all of our contact information, of course, in the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. But if you just want to find us on Twitter, Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're also over on Facebook. Richard kind of mentioned he's got another podcast here. It's called Home On, where he covers smart home stuff. What's the latest with Home On?
The latest was the episode that we did at Cedia, and I released that as an audio episode. That's episode 109. I know we originally planned on having the LifeX episode come out, but Cedia kind of snuck in there, and timing-wise with other guests, we ended up spreading it out a little bit. So you can listen to that now, or if you're really interested in seeing the faces that are involved in those conversations, not necessarily properly synced with the words coming out of their respective mouths, we also have a video of that same episode. So we attempted to stream this. It was a little bit rocky. And in fact, halfway through, you can see a very big difference in cameras because we had to switch cameras. My computer with the webcam died, but we got a full episode out of it. And if you're interested in seeing the video version of those, that's out on our YouTube channel and even the link on our website that normally hosts the episode also has that embedded video if you want to check that out. And then, like I said, coming up, we have the founder of LifeX for a lot of really fun discussion there. And I did mention we have Ring coming up. That'll be after LifeX.
Nice. My other show is Story Players that I do with Joe D'Estasio, where we analyze story-driven video games. It's been a few weeks since our last episode, but we've got two coming up for you real soon, because next week we see the next episode in the final season of The Walking Dead video game and the first episode in Life is Strange 2. So those will be releasing as soon as we can play the games and record them. So I would say about 2 weeks from the day that we're recording this. So very, very early October for those. And then just a reminder, this show, Entertainment 2.0, we record this live. We use Mixer to do this every week, normally 8:30 p.m. on a Tuesday, a little bit later tonight. But you can follow us on Twitter to find out for sure when those shows are going to be live. There's a chat room. There's video with audio that's properly synchronized. And it's a lot of fun. So come and join us and actually join and be a part of the show by jumping into the chat room. But that's going to do it for episode 460. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.